Hello, Chris from Circularity here. We spent some time at Timber Festival 2023, and whilst we were there with our Wellbeing Wagon, we collected some voices, we collected some stories, and we collected some ideas from the people that were there. So what you're going to hear for the next sort of 35 minutes or so is exactly that. Just a stream of consciousness of conversation that took place at Timber Festival 2023 between Circularity and the general
you
public.
You leave when it's dark, you sit in an artificial room of artificial light, and then you go home and it's dark. So you actually don't come into contact with the actual sunlight for a whole day, 5 days of the week possibly, 6 days of the week. So like, I mean, and then if you look at like, everyone's got to take vitamin D and all that sort of stuff. So like, I suppose I work in healthcare, so like, I suppose, there is a huge disconnect, but I don't know how you know, everyone knows that they feel better when they're in nature, I think, to some degree. Have you just, there was one time, when was that weekend, me and I just sat on, like, just little peaceful moments like that, great, but you don't, I think that's all you need in some ways to be well, but the world is getting faster and faster and more technological, like AI, so it's lots of social media, so I think even kids are probably, like, it's much harder for kids, but yes, and I tend to read a lot of, like, Jung is like my favourite guy. But he had a quote, was like, when man lives simply, he is simple. And some degree, like, he lived in a house with no electricity, like chopped wood, you know, sort of did things a bit old school, yeah, a bit off grid. And like, and I suppose in modern society, you don't have any of that. But I sometimes think, like, if there was, I remember like when I was in Auckland for a while, and there was like a yoga community, so there was like a place you could live where there was like a yoga place and you could rent a room there, and it was like a little, it was sort of off-grid community but by the city, like north of Auckland. When I think about like the UK, it's not very happening here. I suppose Scandinavian countries have it a lot more,
I think for a lot of people and a lot of families, places like going to a festival or going on holiday, if you live in the city, if you live in a high-rise flat, if you live in a small house on a street, going on holiday to somewhere away from that is almost unreachable or unthinkable at certain stages. So I think stuff needs to start small. Like, I think it's that community-led projects, it's those small things that gives people that 10-minute break, that half an hour break in the middle of the day, that does get you back in touch with things. As an adult, if you're sat at an office, because a lot of jobs are sitting at an office and sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day, you can easily lose touch with just having that hour of being outdoors, being in touch with...
Yeah, and it's certainly better than nothing, isn't it? It's better than nothing. But yeah, I suppose, like, you think about that, your ancestors would have been foraging, hunting. Once their food was sorted, once their shelter was sorted, they probably just sat still, relaxed, were at home wherever they were, do you know what I mean? And I think it's a complete polarity to, like, how we live now, do you know? Like, I think, but yeah, it is. Yeah, you're right, though. Like, you can't always have those big ideas. So how do you make it, micro-scaled and... And I suppose the other thing is you're losing more and more of the green spaces as well. I mean, that's another difficulty, right?
That's the problem.
So much houses being thrown up now. Like, I suppose people become less, more disillusioned with that through COVID, I suppose, because people spent more time, either some people couldn't work, were on sort of like payments. They spent more time with their families. They maybe did get out a little bit more, and they probably had a bit of a wake-up call of like, well, what have I been doing the past sort of 20 years, you know, just working and paying. And they probably got a bit of a taste of like what the simpler side of life is when you just have some time with the people that matter.
I was an environmental manager for a large mineral processing company. Well, it means instead of sitting at a desk, whether at home or at work, for 8 hours a day, I'm now out on my bike, out walking. I still work to a schedule. So it's like yesterday I was on a walk and I thought, right, that seemed to have taken me a long time from walk from A to B, and then I had to walk from B back to A. And in actual fact, it was only half an hour.
Yeah.
Yes. But maybe it was because I'd already walked for about 3 hours that I thought it was a long way. I'm starting to volunteer for various organisations, and that's as much of a schedule as I have. Or I'm going off in my camper van, so I know on Tuesday I'm off somewhere.
Oh.
Second week I was retired, We went to a campsite in southeast London, which was a 10-minute walk from the end station of the Elizabeth Line, which meant we could, for 3 days, we just got on the Elizabeth Line.
Yeah.
One day we went to the V&A. Second day we went to something we'd pre-booked at near Euston.
Right.
And the third day we went for a walk round Spitalfields and that sort of area.
Amazing.
Mm. And ended up at Tate Modern. That was another day when we walked about 10 or 12 miles. I mean, the whole trip was based around the fact that David Hockney had a virtual reality show in North London.
Right.
And it was due to finish in about May, but then it got extended.
Right.
So we then decided, right, well, we'll go to London, we'll to suss out this campsite, mm-hmm. go to this show, and then it's an easy option for getting to London, because from here to get to London is not easy or cheap. I've been planning to do some art for the last 3 or 4 years. I've got various bits of stuff, but I still haven't actually opened it. So because I've always had the excuse, well, I haven't got enough time and I've got other things to do. Whereas I'm thinking, come the winter, I will have plenty of time, I won't have other things to do. Whereas at the moment, I can go off bike riding, walking, exploring. Somebody said to me years ago, when you retire, don't retire at the beginning of the winter. Wait until the beginning of the summer. You can get out and you can do things, and the change then isn't so stark.
We all buy into the 9 to 5, like the 5 days a week, the mortgages, like, and to some degree, I guess everyone's life comes to like a disillusionment and a bit of a search. And certainly like creativity wise, I mean, that's not something that's wholly, unless you're really good at perhaps like an art or something at school, it's not something that takes off. So I suppose those things like where you're running things like that in the weekends and people can give new things a go, because people think creativity is just like your poetry, literature or drawing, but there's so much other things that you can think, you know, there's so many other directions with that. You know, I'd say that everyone would be creative, but people would never think that, or they'd be disillusioned by a school system because they'd feel they'd be put down or put off things.
Usually I work with adults, but I mostly work with adults with severe depression, because there's something about growing. If you plant a seed, you only plant a seed with an intention to be there. You have to be there every day to check on it, every week to water it, and always we talk about what's it going to taste like when you eat the pumpkin, or you know, what are you going to cook this with? So we're building in an optimistic future where people are still alive, to enjoy the future. So you can do therapeutic work with gardening that you can't do with a lot of other crafts. They're lovely for the moment that you're doing them, but they don't have that built-in expectation of future. Whereas gardening, you can build in a 20-year expectation to a 2-day expectation, but it's always talking about an optimistic future that people are in. Everyone who comes gets a spider plant or something that's pretty easy to take care of, but to take home. And then they come back for an information card for how to look after it. So, do you know what I mean? So we're keeping people there, and there's that cycle. It's like, you'll come back, you know, on this date and we'll give you this information. Yeah. So you're already building in an expectation of there's a future with that person in it. On every single turn, you're always looking at an optimistic future. But I choose to use horticulture for that because I think it's one of the most powerful things. I think people are soil deprived, nature deprived, and just sort of dislocated from the natural world to a point where, you know, you've really, I don't know, you've got to work quite hard to find those reconnections again, because you find people going, oh, shouldn't we have gloves for working with the soil?
Yeah.
And you think, well, you can if you feel the need, but we've also got a sink with some soap afterwards, and you know, smell it, get your fingers in it, get involved with it, like just make a connection with yourself, and people get it really quickly, because we're supposed to be connected with nature. We're supposed to have a connection with our food and where it's coming from, and a responsibility
Absolutely.
For that food.
Yeah.
And you know, we need that connection, and sort of supermarkets and modern life and high-rise flats has just created such a disconnect.
Yeah.
It's tremendously unhealthy for on long term.
I live in Burton-on-Trent and I run the Burton-on-Trent Repair Cafe. Get a little plug in there straight away. I feel Yeah, completely lifted, removed from, not completely removed from the thoughts of work. Yeah, I'm sitting in the chair, looking at the sky, thinking what's going to happen on Monday, but also just able to, you know, put those to one side, put them in the right place, know they're coming, and it's not the right time to think about that, and just connect to what's around you, nature, people, you know, the experiences, and just take a deep breath and relax. So I think, yeah, clearly, you know, moving your body to music is just, you know, a wonderful experience, but actually doing that in the woods, you know, in the early hours, you know, I'm now 50 and I felt like I was possibly one of the oldest ones there, but all ages, you know, all people, you know, just having fun together. You know, what more could you want? Fantastic experience.
So yeah, there's, depending on the kind of work you do, there's definitely a divide, isn't there, between people that are in the office all day in front of a computer and people.
Is that your role, boss?
Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. I'm trying to change that balance to be more outdoor and more around people in different environments. So for me, kind of outdoor wellness is a big thing that I want to make part of my life. Yeah. And it's something we've started to introduce. So we went for a foraging walk earlier today, and we went looking for birch and for oak, and we've kind of pruned some of the trees to make, and then brought them back to the sauna to make some sauna whisks. You can take the plants into the hot room and the aromas, you can kind of get the oils into your skin through like a light massage, and it's really good for circulation as well. So you'll start in the hot for maybe like 12 minutes, and we'll create lots of steam in there, and then you'll step out, have a bit of a refresh with the shower, and then maybe look to do between 1 and 3 minutes in the cold water.
Really, if you can take it.
Yeah, so it's all kind of gradual and at your own pace. Like, people tend to maybe step in on the first round, you'll go through a second round, and you might try and sit down or take a plunge, and then by the third round, we can't get you out of it.
Yeah, I'm Dominic Summers, so I'm the co-creative director of another festival called the Festival of Thrift, and we kind of, that's a festival that happens at the end of September up in the northeast, in Stockton-on-Tees, and it's over 2 days and it attracts over 50,000 people. So it's really quite big. It's a free festival, and I guess what our function, and we started about 10 years ago, is we wanted to find a way of, in a sense, trying to engage people with how they can bring about positive change in their own lives that will have a better effect around sustainability, so less throwaway culture, fixing things, sharing things, also kind of like their lifestyle choices. You know, we do a lot of work now around fast fashion and trying to adopt and get people to change to a mindset of slow fashion, or actually taking pride in that. And I think we're helped a little bit by, you know, there's been, you know, thrifting has become cool again with younger people. Those things tend to go in a cycle, really, and we use arts as a way, I guess, as translating. So we have a lot of outdoor arts performance, like here at Timber Festival, but we also have a lot of community projects. And interestingly, you know, we've just been talking about the hub that you've got. That's where we're looking at moving, because we've realised that having a festival, as glorious it is, that blossoms once a year, is not enough. And actually, what we need is a kind of regular space where people come to connect, share ideas, think about what we need to do that will, A, feed into the festival, but actually into our communities, and actually get more people engaged with volunteering, with looking at projects they can set up that will impact, again, that kind of area. And where we're at is heavily, you know, it's got a rich industrial heritage. But the question is now is you know for things that are energy intensive, how do you change them? What are the answers?
So we're talking this weekend about this. I mean, this area that we're in now, in sort of South Derbyshire or Northwest Leicestershire, is this kind of mining heritage place. It's gone from what we call black to green over time. So it's changed from the coal focused thing, the industrial focused thing, and it's changed into this kind of landscape, which is obviously very green and very lush. And, you know, we had a film that we celebrated that with called The Fellowship of the Woods, where we brought people together over a period of time, over 8 weeks, and we did activities all together in the woods. And the whole purpose of that was this idea of changing people's brains from needing to do things in buildings and needing to do things in industrial settings and places that you're used to, like, I want a band practice. Right, let's hire a studio or hire a village hall. Why not go into the woods with some acoustics? You know, why not, you know what I mean? Why not try something that's like a little bit different, you know?
That is music to my ears. No, no pun intended. I think the idea of getting people out into nature and appreciating what it is that we are trying to protect and appreciate. And actually, you know, look, my mum's from an area in South Yorkshire, coal mining, heavily industrial, and she talked about growing up in monochrome because everything was covered in dirt. Wow. You know, and actually she couldn't wait to escape.
Yes.
And there's a deep pride and meaning in those communities, which I absolutely get. But equally, you know, it's like, what replaces them? Mm. And actually, many of those, you know, I've done a lot of work with former miners who go, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
I was proud of what we did. It was a good, skilled, paid job, but I would never want to go back. I would never want my kids to do it for those reasons. Yeah. And you see these places that had a deep sense of pride in that industrial heritage.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you harness that now? How do you still celebrate those places? Still, absolutely, you know, those places often were powered by innovation.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I've just heard that brilliantly, you've got a fix-it cafe.
Yeah.
And those kind of skills to repair that we've lost. Mm. And how do we bring those back and change our mindsets? We're fascinated with that, really. In a sense, what we're trying to do is put in a little cognitive stop where you go, do I need this thing?
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You know, am I just doing this for a short endorphin rush that I have this thing to show off? Do I really need this thing? Mm. You know, what makes me feel more alive? You know, you talked about going out into the landscape, into the forest, into the woods. Those are the things that actually 10 years later you have a memory of, or a smell of, or is a time machine to certain parts of your life. Objects, unless they're empowered in some way, often don't, you know. And I think creating meaningful experience shared with other people, you know, that's the key to happiness as well.
Totally.
And you know, I think one of the longest researchers projects into what makes us happy is shared experience with family and friends.
Yeah.
And actually, when we're disconnected from our places and our families and our friends, or having a value to what we do, that's when it's deeply problematic. And actually, you probably saw that in, you know, in lockdown, you know, where people were restricted. They, in a sense, they appreciated when they could go out for an hour's exercise.
Yeah. Yeah.
The landscape, suddenly they discovered it. You know, I love going walking and wild camping, but suddenly there were tons more people out there that had kind of had their eyes open to go in, oh, I can benefit from being in the natural world. And, you know, for me, that's kind of, we need to keep building on that.
So one of my key questions, and something that I really want to explore this weekend, is this idea or meditation on how do you join the two things. So if you have to have money in society, and you have to have jobs in society, and you have to have these things to keep the machine going, if you like, how do you bring that other thing into that, and how do you connect the two together?
Yeah.
And can you? Is that possible?
I think it's a really interesting question, and something I talk to a lot of people about is the most precious thing we've got is time, and what we do with that time or exchange for it. And some people are motivated by financial success, or they've bought into what they think success is, but often they'll spend that time, you know, not doing something they enjoy. A very good friend of mine worked in the finance sector in London. He'd studied with me. Creative writing is what he'd studied. And then he went and made a lot of money, and he had an epiphany doing it that he felt ashamed of what he was doing.
Wow.
It felt bad for his soul when he was trying to sell shares to people that didn't need it. And he after, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, he just literally went, handed in his notice, went off to train to be an artisan baker to cleanse his soul, I think. making amazing pizzas and other things. And again, for him, it was like he had to get so much hatred to what he was doing, even though it was financially, he was, doing really well at that. But it ceased to have any meaning in there. So I think, it is about how do you step back and think about what it is that, kind of actually makes you feel like you've got value or that you've got some joy in you. And I think when we don't have joy, then it escapes meaning. Really cheesily, a number of years ago, I discovered that I enjoyed spoon carving. I'll confess, it's a very hipster thing to do, so there, it comes with shame as well. But it purely came from... I went for a walk and there'd been a storm and a tree had blocked a walk that I always do, and it blocked it for the people that was on a bridge. So I sawed it and fixed it because I thought no one else is gonna, and I thought I should do something with this wood. And it was a terrible spoon, by the way. It took me days to carve in at this thing. I didn't really know what I was doing. But it was going, there was an opportunity, I did this. And actually, that I got a little bit better and learned some skills and found out there were people in Sweden doing interesting things to preserve these skills in the 1960s. And so it was something that gave me pleasure or meditative time out, to go back to your answer. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's finding the thing.
Finding the thing.
Finding the thing. Just find the thing and then you find.
The key is make people curious about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then they'll come and engage with it. If they think they know what they're doing, they're already ruling it out and go, oh, it's not for me.
Yeah.
But actually, if they don't, if it looks a bit weird or a bit strange or they're not sure about it, that's a great way in to having that dialogue about what you do.
I like it. So never fully explain yourself.
Never fully explain yourself.
I feel like myself when I'm in nature. I relax, I breathe, I just feel a big unburdening, really, because we go off in our caravan, don't we? Loads of weekends and we just go to very little field sites.
We went to a small site in the middle of nowhere, really, but I mean the bird life is just absolutely wonderful, and we were watching hares for hours, weren't we? Birds for hours, and absolutely wonderful.
And you reconnect. It reminds you that we are nature. We are nature. We are part of nature. We're not separate.
The majority of people don't appreciate nature.
I am from Czech Republic. What brings me to Timber? I have a little 7-year-old, and I suppose when she was born, I had not very nice memories of childhood growing up in a very industrial Sheffield-like city in the Czech Republic, coal mines, steelworks. And I just, when I felt happiest was with my grandparents in the mountains, in their kind of mountain houses when we were just free to roam and play in the streams and wild swim and grow vegetables and scythe the grass. We still kind of were taught those traditional skills, and I thought, living in London, I'd like my daughter to kind of feel connected similarly. We haven't got the means to have second home, somewhere kind of nice. So, I was kind of seeking out for a school. We managed to find one, and it was kind of godsend, really. So 3 years outdoors for this little one, in all weathers. So that was absolutely fabulous. And then I suppose, from then on, I was searching for places to go. I always loved world music and music, but then I thought, with little one, let's try with smaller festivals and kind of nature-minded, sort of oriented festivals. That's how we came. It's small, so we came last year, and we fell in love with it, and we came this year again, and it was midnight, and you could still see little children running around and just being free. There's this kind of focus, send your child to bed at 7 o'clock because this is the kind of office hours, 9 to 5, then go to bed. And I think I kind of discovered the concept of polyphasic sleeping, where in traditional cultures, people would sleep in chunks. They would do a bit of work, or in the hot countries, they would have a siesta lunchtime, then they would work till 9, 10, they would have a nap, then they maybe would eat at 11, then they would pray, and then they would go hunting or something like that. And the children were always part of it, children would be carried, and so we used to sleep in small chunks as opposed to one, and they say the power of power nap is amazing.
I'm a big fan of the afternoon nap. I think people think you've been lazy, but I just think it's brilliant. There's nothing better for me. If I'm having a bad day, I just have only half an hour. you know, it's not the end of the world. I'm just going to close my eyes for a bit. I wanted to ask you, though, about how you deal with, I guess, that love of the forest and that, you know, wanting to be outdoors in London. Because there are big green spaces in London, but they're normally quite busy whenever I'm there. So how do you deal with that when you're in the city?
Well, I suppose as much as I'm not a lover of London, and it betrays my age, maybe, but it's one of the greenest cities in Europe. I think there's a large percentage of the land is forested. We live in southeast London. We are lucky to be next to Shooter's Hill, Oxley's Woodlands, which is the second largest woodland in London. I believe it's a triple SI. And southeast London is not that popular with tourists. It's still seen as the kind of poorer, quiet part of London. So we have acres and acres of triple SI land available to us. And we've been volunteering with the Friends of Oxley's Woodlands for the past 4 years. So doing coppicing, removal of invasive species such as rhododendron and holly, sadly. Even though it is a sacred tree, as we know, in England. But yeah, it can be too much holly in places.
Just before I started recording, you were talking about the idea of sharing and yeah, your kind of your history maybe has a slightly different take on perhaps what we were...
Yeah, it's really interesting. So obviously growing up in communism, we had quite idyllic childhoods. You know, we didn't want for things because there was nothing to want, you know. We kind of dreamt of jeans, someone showed us pictures of someone in jeans and white t-shirt, and everyone wanted jeans, but you couldn't get that. And you know, the shopping was kind of shopping in local markets. Supermarkets didn't exist as such, you know, just small grocers. So it was quite idyllic. And we could focus on play, you know, running wild. Even in cities, we played on, I don't know what's it called, the waste heaps, you know, from coal mines. Oh, wow, those, yeah, everything was very polluted. We all had asthma, but you know, we're still, I suppose, happy and kind of streetwise. But since the revolution in 1989, you know, we kind of aspired to live the consumerist kind of Western life. And it breaks my heart seeing when I go back home, when it's interesting, when you're landing in Prague Airport, you will see every house underneath you has got a swimming pool, private swimming pool. Because people have a lot more disposable income in Czech Republic than people have now in the UK, you know, the kind the balance is tipping. But so everyone now has sauna and swimming pool, well, every other person. And it's really sad because the Lidos are closing, just like what happened here in the 70s, 80s, I believe, you know, with kind of during Thatcher era. Yeah. So it's kind of my house, you know, my own thing, and the shared spaces were disappearing. And it's happening now in Czech, and I'm thinking, I remember these Lidos, and the Lidos would have pub attached to it, you know, small little shed that worked as a pub, and it was a community space. And it didn't matter whether you were... Well, during communism, everyone had roughly the same amount of money. But it didn't matter who you were, you know, what your occupation was. Everyone met in those communal spaces. And because we are now richer, we're getting rid of them and everyone's more depressed. I think there's still so much food waste in this country. You can even see it in pubs, restaurants, people over-order and then it all goes to bin. I don't know, just... So I think it's going to be, you know, I think our children probably will go through quite tough, kind of economically tough times.
I've got this woodland that I go round very close to here, and the minute I walk past a certain tree, it's just like... I think it takes me so far in. Yeah. It's perhaps not that the tree, but it's so many paces in. I'm a tree hugger. And I've done forest bathing, so I know how... The first forest bathing, she got us to put our hands on our hearts, yes, and listen to your heartbeat before you started. Right. And then at the end...
What is it about times and spaces like these where we're maybe away from the office or we're away from the home or we're in, you know, we're in a community space? What is it about that that's so important? And what about that is, you know, if we've got the there's two sorts of lives that we have: the life that's based around work and earning money and, you know, spending money and consuming, and then there seems to be this other side of life, which is like going out and enjoying yourself and meeting people and connecting and being in nature and all those sorts of things. And I was sort of, we're trying to explore where how do they those two worlds meet effectively.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I'm an artist, so I'm like a musician, so I don't really have an office or a place of where I don't have disconnection. But I think the most important thing is that these opportunities for people that do work to have time out away from, you know, the concrete jungle and their electronics and make this connection, exactly what we're doing now, and me saying g'day to Karen, you know, borrowed a lighter and we got chatting. And I think that's a really, you know, good thing. I think a lot of people, I feel like I'm on the outside looking in. So, you know, I see people that are stressed out in their daily, you know, jobs, to then have opportunity to come to the places like this and relax and, you know, let their worries go through music and art and colour and yoga or whatever it be, you know, a gong bath, you know. I think that's the most important thing. I think there's a real, I don't know what it's like in the UK, but we have in Australia like an epidemic of mental health issues, probably post-COVID for a lot of people, and also just the cost of everything rising. So I think there's a lot of trouble in that there's a idea through the medical fraternity that our lost connections might be to do with lost connections in our brains, you know, like mental health or depression or anxiety, whereas there's that sort of, this is embracing the theory that the lost connection is actually not the wiring of the brain. It's the lost connection for me walking past Karen in a busy train station and not saying hello, not making that connection. So I think these environments, you know, are really good for exactly what we're doing now, you know. And also quite inspired by the fact that I've found out that the basis of this is about reforesting this area, about planting trees. You know.
Totally. I mean, this was a very kind of coal mining focused industrial area.
Yeah, I saw some old photos of it just briefly when I did a little bit of a Google on where we were going, and that's what I noticed, that this was that, you know, like what I see, and you see it along railway lines. We've been travelling by train, and you also see it in Australia, but in the urban areas beside the railway line, we have the community gardens where the council are giving up that cheap land next to the railway line for community houses like yours and our community houses to all get together and grow veggies and share them. Another great connection. Yeah, and I play the piano accordion because it's a good travelling instrument. I was saying to Karen that I travel with an accordion because it's a nice way to meet people, you know, and get a part, be a part of a community. You know, in the time that I've travelled, I've never really been a tourist, but I've, you know, visited a lot of different cities, but I ended up at your community house or Karen's place for a barbie because of the music, you know, that connection.
We went for a foraging.
I love spending time in nature, as I'm sure most people do. The last month before Timber started, I was actually doing a residency, an artist residency with Wild Rumpus in their headquarters over in Cheshire, which is based in a woodland. And so when we're thinking about our connection to nature at Timber, and when we're thinking about how our mood and our emotions and our creativity and productivity is impacted by being in and around nature, I think it's really important to know that even when we're trying to be really productive, heading to nature for a break. I was writing my dissertation in the woods, basically, so I made a conscious effort to do this kind of very mental-based task, which was putting together loads of information that I'd gathered over the year and condensing it into an essay. I wanted to make sure that I could do that in a place that was going to be healing and nurturing for me. So I had the chance to go and do that in the woods, basically, and Wild Rumpus were able to facilitate that and support that. So they're really about that, and I think that it shows itself in the festival here. You know, people just with their shoes off, walking in amongst the trees, and immediately you can see, I'm looking to my left and there's a kid rolling down a hill, you know, and I think it's really important that we get the chance to do that, climb trees and roll down hills and get our feet in the earth, and to ignite that sense of play, because if we can keep play alive in all the things that we're doing, I think it's gonna heighten our mood and our emotions, and our creativity will just come to life. And you can see Timber is just an example of that.
So there we have it, a ramble through the woods at Timber Festival, conversations with people around our wellbeing wagon, recorded and edited for your oral pleasure. yeah, we hope to be there again, and we hope to speak to some more people, and I hope that some of that stuff that, that we were talking about there resonated with you in some way, and that you could take something away from that. Here's me signing off. Take care, see you soon.